You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 303 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Superman War World Apocalypse number 1, The Flash 2022 Annual number 1, Wonder Girl 2022 Annual number 1, Batman Urban Legends number 16, 17, 18, and 19, The Sandman Season 1 Episode 5, 24/7, DC Legends Tomorrow Season 7 Episode 4, Speakeasy Does It, and Stargirl Season 3 Episode 3, Frenemies, Chapter 3, The Blackmail. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC Legion of Super Pets is coming to HBO Max September 26th.
I'm excited to check it out, Drew. It looks pretty, I don't know what the right word is. Amusing sounds like I'm putting it down. That's not what I mean. Like, it looked like it was going to be some lighthearted fun, you know, nothing spectacular, but that's okay. It looks like it would be a worthwhile 2 hours or whatever, so I'm definitely looking forward to checking it out.
I am too. I haven't heard anything about it, so I don't know if it did good, did bad, I don't know. I'm kind of curious if a lot of people, you know, I'm sure some people saw it in the theaters, but I wonder if a lot of people are just waiting for it to hit HBO Max.
It definitely wouldn't surprise me, Drew. And given what we know about how Discovery is operating right now, honestly, it wouldn't totally shock me if we start seeing some change in policy with when movies come to that platform.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Now, I want to be clear. I don't think that would be wise of them, because I think people would just then just not watch it at all. So, but that's just my opinion.
Well, I'm sure it would hit the streaming service at some point. People would just wait longer to see it.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. I think they would try to delay these movies hitting the streaming service in an attempt to make people actually go to the theater. I don't think that would work. I think it would just, like you said, delay until it would not benefit them at all. If anything, it would just hurt their potential subscription numbers for HBO Max, which they seem pretty determined to try and do anyway. So I know I keep beating a dead horse. I cannot get over how unbelievably poorly run this has been since the acquisition.
One thing I want to add to that is delaying it longer coming to HBO Max, it would lose some of the buzz or interest in the movie. You know, if you don't put it on for even longer, you'll have people like, I haven't seen it, so I'm not going to worry about it anyways or whatnot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So. All right, up next for DC News, Madeline Zima will play Casey Brink, the superhero known as Space Case, in the upcoming season of Doom Patrol. I was just happy to see some Doom Patrol news come out. So, get me excited that we got something coming.
If anything, it was a little reassuring, Drew, because I don't remember if we knew for sure that it was getting another season, did we?
It was announced, but we haven't heard anything about it for quite a while.
Yeah, so I agree. I don't know anything about the character. That's okay. Like you said, Drew, it was nice just to hear something about Doom Patrol. Honestly, for me, it was reassuring, given how much we've been seeing different projects getting flushed down the drain. It was like, no, this one's still happening, so... Thank God. I am excited for the character. I think it's cool to continue to introduce new things, of course, but mostly I'm just excited that the show's not dead.
Me too. And it'll be interesting to see if this ends up being the last season.
I hope not, but I will say we've gotten to a point season number wise where I'll be less heartbroken if the show does end, because it's gotten a pretty healthy run at this point, but I definitely don't want to see the show end either.
All right. And for our last bit of DC news, after weeks of rumors, Breck Basinger has seemingly confirmed a crossover between Stargirl and Titans, sharing a behind-the-scenes photo in which she, in her Stargirl costume, is posing with Titan star Ryan Potter, Beast Boy, Stargirl creator Geoff Johns and director Eric Dean Seton. Now, I had been hearing rumors about a crossover between Stargirl and Titans for quite a while. I didn't want to announce it on DC News till we had something confirmed. And when this photo came out, I was like, okay, there's something confirmed. Because I had been hearing things that she was supposed to be going to the Titans set, and nothing ever materialized until earlier this week.
The crossover definitely makes sense with you've got two different teenage teams. So there's a really logical reason to have those two teams intermix, right? You can do a lot with a kind of interplay between team members. I will say, though, on the other hand, the tones of the shows are far apart, to say the least. So it'll be a little interesting to see what that crossover looks like and in which direction that crossover is going. Is it going to be mutual? Are we going to see these on both shows? Or is it going to be like we had the Doom Patrol pop up on Titans first before they got their own show? And they were a little bit different, mainly Chief, but they weren't quite the same, right, as they were on their own show. I'm curious what this will look like. I wouldn't be upset if it was more towards the Stargirl style, because I'd kind of like to see some of these Titans characters a little more upbeat than what we see sometimes.
Well, I haven't heard anything about any of the Titans characters being on Stargirl. I've been wondering if it's more of a cameo than a crossover. Because you know how the news kind of blows things out of proportion sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I agree, Drew. I'm not expecting anything major in terms of, like, story-wise. I think it'll just be cool to see. Hopefully the characters are going to actually interact in some way, because I think technically we've seen one or the other briefly pop up before, right? Like, I don't think it... I know I'm thinking of Crisis had both of those universes pop up briefly when they were talking about other worlds that still existed, but I thought one of the two shows had like a flash of a scene from one of the shows, but maybe I'm remembering wrong.
I can't remember, honestly. So, I can't remember if it was more than just them popping up, so...
But yeah, I'm hopeful it's like I'm hoping for some sort of actual interaction between characters, if that makes sense, and not just like like it's some flash of Stargirl's world and they see the team and their crystal ball or whatever.
Yeah. It'll be interesting, that's for sure. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
So how do we describe this show? Like, what's really going to grab people's attention and make them tune in?
Nerdgasm for your eargasm?
What?
The spice must flow to be in the know.
Don't
be a willow, grab your pillow.
But that one doesn't even make sense.
All right, stop. Snag a seat and listen. The nerds are back with a brand new edition.
No!
Okay, then. The Blurred Nerds Podcast. Rants, raves, reviews, recaps, and other bits of random fandom.
Well, see, that's perfect. You should have just led with that one.
Resistance is futile. Listen to the Blurred Nerds Podcast, right? Meow.
Fine. Make it so.
Winter is coming. Prepare with a fine cigar and listen to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. We smoke cigars and talk about movies and all kind of nerdy things. Available at CigarNerdPodcast.com. Also on the ESO Network at ESONetwork.com.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Superman, War World Apocalypse number 1. Krulux has betrayed Superman and has been working with Mongol this whole time. Mongol demands the Fire of Ulgrun, or Superman's grubs die. When Superman goes to hand over the Fire of Ulgrun to Mongol, Otho attacks Mongol. Mongol snaps Osol's neck and tosses him at Superman's feet. Elsewhere, Mongol's Unmade attack. Midnighter leads Superman's army against the Unmade. Apollo is making it difficult for Superman's army. Manchester Black uses magic to trick Apollo into seeing the Justice League attack him. Thinking Cyborg has an appendage shoved into the back of his head, Apollo rips out Teacher's neural implant, freeing him from Mongol's control. With Apollo on their side, OMAC just wants Leah back. OMAC apologizes for fighting them and pleads with the others to help him get Leah back. The Star Forge of Engine City 1. Orphan takes out Teacher and is reunited with Darling. Natasha wires the reactor to the Star Forge. Leah races to destroy the Star Forge, but OMAC is able to stop her. OMAC sacrifices himself to save Leah. Superman and Mongol battle. Krulux also joins the fight against Superman. Superman states that the Fire of Ulgron is not just strength, but life. It belongs to the best and bravest of us. That's neither of you nor me. Superman plunges the Fire of Ulgron into Ozul's chest, imbuing the dead boy with power and reviving him. Mongol and Superman continue to battle. Mongol goes for the kill, but suddenly Superman is powered up. Krulux comes up from behind Mongol and kills him. Krulux exclaims, "That was the first death I'm owed." Midnighter and the others continue to battle against the undead. Suddenly the Philosians gain super strength and the tide of the battle turns. Superman's army wins. Weeks later, the planet Daxam, in the receiving hall of the Lord Premier of the United Planets, Theros of Illashar is confronted by Krulux, who states that one day soon, you and your United Planets will one day beg him for mercy. Superman returns home and is reunited with Lois Lane. Kal-El returns in Action Comics 1047. I thought this was a great ending to this story, Cletus. And one of the things that kind of excited me was we saw Krulux's betrayal, that it looked like he was working for Mongol, but then he goes around and kills Mongol. So his goal the whole time was to kill Mongol. He basically used Superman to get at Mongol. And it looks like he wants further revenge against the United Planets. And it looks like Krulux is going to be a future villain for Superman. So I find it very intriguing because Superman's not going to let Krulux, you know, go after United Planets and start killing other people. So I find it really intriguing, the setup for future stories.
I agree, Drew. I like that. First off, I enjoyed the conclusion to this conflict between Superman and Mongol. I thought that they wrapped that up really well. I also like that, like you said, we've got this tease for who appears to be a new antagonist for Superman in the future, possibly the next arc, I don't know. But I like that too, Drew. The only thing that I think is a little wonky is that the twist of him first appearing to work for Mongol, but really working for his own agenda the whole time, ultimately was an enjoyable one, but I'm not sure if it totally makes sense. Given right before this, Drew, he should have been dead. Like, he's literally in the teeth of the monster. Now, I understand banking on Superman's humanity to save you. I get that, and that is not a flaw in your strategy. But, like, he was pretty content to die, Drew. Remember, he's telling Superman to leave him.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Again, I know it's a minor thing. Obviously, I'm sure he didn't plan on getting attacked like that, right? But, like, if he's up to something else and has a different agenda, and all of a sudden, it's going to go rather sideways, to say the least, right? If he gets killed by this creature, I don't know that I'd be telling Superman to just let me die. I'd be a little more interested in my survival if I was him.
Now, I do have a question for you, because I don't remember if they ever revealed it. But do you remember way back at the beginning of the story, there was some mysterious character who came to Mongol and suggested Superman coming there? Do you think it was Krulux?
It has to be. Yeah, there's no question.
I'm surprised they didn't readdress that in this issue.
I agree, Drew, because we saw that character several times early on, right? And we never totally saw who it was. And then it just kind of went away for a while. And it was always sort of on the back of my mind, but it definitely, like, as we continued on the story, and they never really got back to that character. It was kind of like, what are they ever going to address that? I mean, they have to. And then ultimately, like you said, they did. I am a little bit surprised that they didn't make that more clear for readers who maybe either didn't read the beginning of the story, which is always possible, or readers who, like us, Drew, started reading this story, what, like a calendar year ago? Maybe, I don't know, maybe do your readers a little bit of a favor and remind them? I don't know. I was a little bit surprised by that. So like I said, I thought a lot of the twists went really well. The only thing that I thought was a little clunky was, I understand what they were trying to do, Drew, right? They're trying to solidify our view of this guy as Superman's ally, right? Being the heroic sacrifice. No, leave me, save everybody else, right? So they were firmly convinced that this guy's on Superman's side so that it makes the betrayal harder. I get why they do that, but then it doesn't make sense when he does actually flip because, like, again, why would it doesn't serve his interest to die there. Again, I'm not saying that he was trying to die, right? I know he didn't set that up, but if your entire plan hinges on using Superman to lure Mongol into a state where you can kill him, and you're clearly he was the only one that was capable of doing that, right? He didn't have anybody else set up to do that in case he died. I don't think that he'd be okay with just dying right there. You know what I mean, Drew?
Yeah. You're hung up on that a little more than I am. It didn't bother me that much.
I think I know I get hung up on some stupid details sometimes for sure. But this one, Drew, for me, it's because it was so avoidable. Literally just don't have him say that line. I think that sometimes I have a hard time with some of these smaller details when they're avoidable. Like this, it's so avoidable. Just don't have him say that line, right? Have him be attacked, whatever. Right. We still get the same impression. He's on Superman's side and we still get the same shock of the reveal. But you don't have the I don't know if that felt like an easy misstep to avoid.
One thing that bothered me, and it bothers me every time it comes up too, is the planet Daxam, it being the home of the United Planets. It always bothers me because in Geoff Johns' run on Green Lantern, Daxam was a planet that didn't like having aliens on it. They had this prejudice against aliens, and I know that's always stuck with me. So anytime I see Daxam with aliens and stuff, having the United Planets headquarters there is just weird to me.
Yeah, I agree. To be fair, I feel like they've shown that the present day United, and honestly, even in the future, the United Planets organization is far more corrupt than either Superman is aware or is willing to admit to himself. But I agree with you, Drew. I mean, they were... Johns, I feel like, portrayed Daxam as, like, extremely racist towards any other species that wasn't Kryptonian. So I got to agree. Even if they are up to something more than, you know, just being part of the United Planets, which they probably are, right? The fact that they'd even be willing to house other people, it seems unlikely. So I'm definitely on the same page as you there.
So I just find that weird every time. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, The Flash, 2022 Annual Number 1. Gregory Wolfe, the current warden of Iron Heights Penitentiary, announces his candidacy for mayor of Central City. Mr. Wolfe claims to be a proponent of tough-on-crime measures, but he also believes that criminals that have served their time should be welcomed back into the community with open arms. Mr. Wolfe has employed several former inmates as part of his campaign team, claiming that everyone needs a second chance. Linda is irritated that everyone keeps asking her if she gained her speed powers by getting struck by lightning. Wally suggests the superhero name Lightspeed, but Linda doesn't want to be a superhero. She wants to be a writer. Linda heads to a book promoting meeting while Wally decides to read Linda's book, Best Laid Plans by Linda Park West. Chapter 1. Beth Hunter graduates from high school and has a plan. Step 1. Get a degree from Keystone College. Beth wants to be a best-selling novelist. Chapter 6. Beth gets married, moves into a studio apartment in a less-than-desirable part of town, but wonders why she doesn't feel alive. Beth just needs to stick to the plan. She has a degree and a husband. Now she just needs her dream job. Chapter 10. Beth goes to a newspaper for a writing job, but it's already been filled. The editor hires her for the mailroom and tells her she can work her way up to reporter. It pays more anyways. Beth gets promoted, but her marriage falls apart. Chapter 15. Beth's new plan is going great. She was promoted again and bought a house in the city. Beth is currently on assignment in New Mexico. A something has killed a herd of cattle. While Beth is interviewing the rancher, a giant porcupine monster attacks. Just as the porcupine monster is about to eat Beth, a man with a jetpack rescues her. His name is William East, but his friends call him Billy. Billy tells Beth he has to go. Just as Billy begins to beam up to his spaceship, Beth grabs his hand and she is teleported with him. Chapter 25. Beth meets Billy and the rest of his space pals from the Golden Recovery crew. Beth learns the GRC crew was hired by the owner of the Celestial Ranch to retrieve the animals that broke out. Beth learns that the owner of the Celestial Ranch, Kadabra, is a villain who wants to destroy the universe. Beth helps Billy and his pals stop Kadabra, which makes her finally feel alive. Wally loves Linda's book. Wally meets Linda after her meeting, and the two go on a special date. Linda states she is having a craving for sea salt caramel gelato. Wally laughs and states he remembers when Linda was pregnant with the twins and wanted that all the time. Linda and Wally both look at each other and wonder if she's pregnant. The adventure continues in the Flash. So, does Linda have speed powers because she has a little speedster in her?
Pretty sound theory, I would think, Drew.
I think so, too. I thought it was kind of neat how they ended this issue. Are we pregnant? So, I kind of like that. I thought it made sense, her having this. That would be the reason why she'd have speed powers. Kind of exciting, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know that we've seen a ton of new introductions to the family of beyond John, right? I feel like John's the last example. And then Damien before that? Am I missing someone, Drew?
Not that I can think of. I can't think of any other babies being born in the DC Universe for quite a while.
The most two recent ones. John, you know, John's fairly recent, to be fair, but Damien's, I mean, really, relatively speaking, has been around for a bit, right? So, yeah
and Damien was actually, at one point, Damien was older than John.
Yeah. In comic book years, he's still older, right?
Yes.
But yeah, so no, I think that's cool, Drew, because, I mean, Wally has certainly been, since this reintroduction of him as the Flash, has been very family-focused, so I think it's an interesting angle to explore in the first place, especially since it's not really something that we've seen really at all in a while that I can think of. I would, if somebody has one on their head that they could think of, I'd love to remember, but I can't think of one past John, which is crazy. You'd think we'd have seen something else, but that wouldn't want to push the status quo too far, Drew.
Oh, I just thought of one. Aquaman and Mira, Andy.
That's true. That's a good point. You are right, Drew. I feel conflicted with that one because it's not the first time that those two have had a kid. Obviously, thus far, it has gone better than the first time they had one.
Yes.
Thankfully. It is. Andy is new. I'm not going to say that is accurate. In my head, though, I almost view that as sort of restoring a former status quo. I'm not saying that that's necessarily accurate, but that's kind of how I view it in my head.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Aquaman doesn't have a book right now either, so we haven't been seeing much of Andy lately.
One thing I like, Drew, is that they've kept Aquaman around popping up in these team-up books. The downside is that they've not been very good, so hopefully we can. And the Aquaman book had been pretty solid, too. So I definitely like to see more. Obviously, the Rom V Aquaman book that we've been reading is phenomenal. Not set in continuity, obviously, but that is really good. But the in-continuity, or at least appearing to be in-continuity stuff, has been not great. Both his team up with Flash and with Green Arrow.
Yes, unfortunately. I got to tell you, I like this annual. A lot of times the annuals aren't that good. Both of the ones we've reviewed so far have been pretty good. And I like the fact that it kind of focused on Linda's book. Because to me, it felt like we got a better glimpse into Linda's world. You know, I didn't know Linda was a was a geek either. Wally, we saw Wally laughing in the middle of him reading that story. He's like, Linda's a nerd. So I thought that was fun. I just thought this was a fun read.
It was a fun read. I will say, obviously, the Superman one, far more important to read if you are trying to figure out which annual you should get. Absolutely, you need to read the Superman one. It's the conclusion to the story. This one's nice. It is a fun story. It is, however, you can definitely miss this comic. Not because it's bad, but also not important. It's the platonic version of an annual, right? Where it's like it's somewhat meaningless, like most annuals are, but it is at least an enjoyable read.
Yeah, you can't skip the Superman one because, well, actually, it's not the Superman one's not really an annual. It was just the ending to that story with its own title.
Yeah, true. That's true. More of a one shot. That's a good point.
So it was more of a one shot, which is weird. They just wouldn't put it in the Action Comics story, but whatever.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know why you don't just make a supersized Action Comics. It's weird to me, Drew. It's especially weird to me because, you know, I'm sure it's not going to. People that are reading the book are going to pick that book up, I would assume, for the most part. But I feel like there's going to be at least a few cases of people who have Action Comics on their pull list, but maybe don't necessarily pay attention enough to realize that they've got to pick a separate book up for this and then don't get it right away. Maybe they probably get it eventually, right? But still, it just feels like a way to make people accidentally miss the conclusion to the story than anything else.
Yeah, that's true.
I would like to know what the benefit is, because again, if people are consistently reading Action Comics, they're going to buy that comic, of course, but they're also just going to, they're definitely going to buy it if it's just the next issue of Action Comics also. So I'm sure there's some reason to it, right? There's got to be some reason why you wouldn't just make it the next issue. I don't know what that would be.
I don't know either. I'm thinking back in the past and stuff like that, they would have done a double sized issue of Action Comics or whatever they needed to do to get it out, you know, in the title. So it's weird that they wanted to do this additional book.
I'm trying to be generous and give them the benefit of the doubt on this, Drew, but the other explanation is that there is no good reason. It was just, it's just them being dumb, so I don't know.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Wonder Girl 2022 Annual Number 1. High up on the mountain kingdom of Olympus lived the Pegasus. Being birthed from the severed neck of Medusa, the beautiful winged creatures remained largely unknown to mankind. One of these creatures was named Jerry. Jerry was a daredevil that liked to fly during thunderstorms. During one of the worst storms ever seen, Jerry took to the sky. One of the young foils who idolized him tried to emulate him during this dangerous storm, faltered, and was lost. From that day forward, Jerry was banished from his kind. Decades and eons would pass as Jerry wandered the world alone. One day he met someone who was also caught between two worlds, who was full of daring adventure, but also deeply alone. In each other, they found the acceptance that each sought from that day forward would continue their adventures together. And of course, that's Yara Flor. The festival. Yara Flor is excited when she spots Jaro and runs to greet him. Yara tells Jaro that she is here to stay. Jaro surprises Yara by introducing her to his girlfriend, Alzira. At the same time, in Akahim, the lost subterranean city in the Amazon and home to the tribe calling themselves the Esquicida, a beast with one eye and a mouth where his stomach should be breaches the city gates. Potira leads the soldiers against the beast. At the festival, the little girl who was tagging along with Yara Flor recognizes Alzira for who she really is, the Kuka. The Kuka was once a twin named Andura, who was selfish and greedy. Andura lost in a contest to her sister for a hand of a handsome man in marriage. In the act of revenge, Andura killed her twin sister's firstborn child. Andura was cursed for all eternity by the goddess Tice. Andura was transformed into the Kuka to be seen by the eyes of men as beautiful and desirable, by women as dismissible and plain, and by children as a scaly, selfish, hideous monster. The Kuka attacks Jacy, but Yara Flor defends the little girl. The festival catches fire because of the Kuka's magic. Yara Fleur and the other Esquisita, including Jerry, attack the Kuka and capture her. With the Kuka captured, the monster falls over dead back at Akahim. Before leaving to go back home, Yara Fleur kisses Jaro. Later in Akahim, the Esquisita are rebuilding after the monster destroyed much of the city. Yara Fleur takes a ride with Jerry before helping out her sisters. This is only the beginning. I love the fact we got Jerry's origin story in this.
Well, at least in theoretically his origin story. We got that was it like a couple panels later? It was implied that Yara might have been exaggerating a little bit. But still an interesting, an enjoyable opening to the story. Drew, I really like this. And this is technically an annual, right?
Yeah, it's in the title.
Yeah, it is. In many ways, it is what you'd expect out of an annual. It's not that dissimilar to The Flash in that it's a self-contained story that's nice, maybe doesn't move the plot or the, you know, the whatever, the world of Yara Fleur along that much. So again, it's not dissimilar to The Flash annual. But I really, if I was recommending one of the two, I would recommend this one. Again, not because I thought Flash was bad. I enjoyed it. But we're not getting Yara Fleur right now. So this is, I think, a great opportunity to, you know, at least experience that character and her world, which I continue to find so fascinating, Drew. And it frustrates me immensely that DC's dropped an ongoing book for that character because it's so good. It's so different. Drew, I can't think of a character we've ever had that's consistently been set in South America, exploring South American mythology. And you know what I mean? Like, it's so fascinating. And I love it. Every issue we get of this and the world, getting another peek into that world that they've created. So I recommend this. Again, it is very similar in terms of quality and type of comic to The Flash. They, you know, they're basically not the same plot, right? But they're very much similar comics. But the difference is Flash is an ongoing book, and you can pick up the regular book for Wally West and not worry about having really missed almost anything in the annual. There's nothing for Yara right now. And so with that being the case, if you enjoy that character, you got to check this out.
Yeah, and Joel Jones is doing her research because that festival, I looked it up, it's real. that's a real festival in Brazil. So I thought that was interesting. And I know nothing about that mythology. I don't know who the goddess Tice and stuff is. But I found the monster really interesting. And the goddess, the story with the twins and stuff, I thought that was interesting too. And I don't know if that was based off a real story or not, but I did find it interesting. I didn't look that up. But I looked up the festival, mainly because I was trying to figure out how to pronounce it. And as you notice, I just kind of dropped it because I can't speak Portuguese, sorry. Even Jaro's name, I'm probably not pronouncing it exactly right either, but that's a real Portuguese name too. So it's very interesting, that's for sure. And of course, the artwork's awesome, just like her artwork usually is. Really enjoyed this. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman Urban Legends number 16. This issue of Batman Urban Legends, we had a lot of finalized stories in this. First one was Batman and Zatanna in Bound to Our Will Part 6 of 6. Batman and Zatanna are able to close the breach between worlds. Dr. Fate, Madame Xanadu, and Circe all notice. Batman and Zatanna make amends, and their friendship is stronger for it. Zatanna joins Bruce for a Bat family dinner. The end. I thought that was a pretty good conclusion to that story, even if we haven't read the rest of it for a while. I kind of liked how it wrapped up quickly, and I thought it was kind of funny with the Superman part.
I was pretty satisfied with the conclusion to this story, Drew. The only thing I would have liked, and I get why it's not in here because, you know, each chapter of this is so small as it's sharing, you know, the rest of the comic with other stories. But we had one of the installments of this story really heavily focused on the two hosts for these demons or beings, whatever they were, and really the kind of tragedy of both of them getting possessed.
right? Especially the boy. We saw, like, he just terrible luck throughout his whole life, and he seems to be kind of figuring it out, and then he gets possessed, right? And it was really a downer. It was a good story, but it was kind of a downer. And I would have liked some sort of payoff with both of those characters, because we see them restored, which is a nice kind of hidden happy ending for the two of those characters. But I would have liked, like, at least one scene where some sort of payoff of them, you know, getting back to the lives that they had stolen from them. Again, I know why. I get why it's not there, because you have a limited amount of space. So I can't really blame them for not including it, but it would have been a nice addition.
Yeah, I agree with you. That would have been a nice addition. We also had Batman and Alfred Pennyworth in Some Things Remain. Alfred notifies Batman that there is an assisted living facility uptown that has a surge in resident deaths. Alfred's friend Stuart is one of them. Alfred investigates to learn that the facility is overdosing the patients and taking their assets. When Alfred gets in trouble, Batman comes to the rescue. The end.
A perfectly fine story. That's about all I have to say, Drew. It was, and there were a lot of these, a lot of the one-shots in these four issues of Urban Legends were fine. They were like solid 6 to 7 out of 10s.
Yeah, I agree with that. This was a fine story. The next one is Birds of Prey in Memory Lane, Part 3 of 3. And I'm not even going to recap of this one, because you know how I felt about this story. So I just thought this was a weird ending with Miracle Molly kind of betraying the team and being the villain.
And also, one thing I didn't really like, Drew, at the end of this, so you're right, so for our readers, not only Miracle Molly betrays the team, appears to be in it for her own agenda, to seize a tech company, help another woman seize a tech company, and it seems, it's implied at the end that they're overthrowing the male owner, CEO, whatever, of this company. But it's not shown or made explicit that that's what's happening. And I thought that that was a weird loose thread to the story. It didn't, there was a lot that felt relatively unresolved about this.
I agree with you. And what was up with Lady Shiva retiring? I thought that was weird too.
I agree. Again, I thought there was some odd choices really throughout this mini story, but this issue in particular, I finished it and I was like, I don't fully understand the story that we just got, because it doesn't really wrap anything up. There was no pseudo conclusion to the story where it's like, we're done for now, but teaser for the future. It was just sort of like, we're going to put the end on here, but there isn't really an end to the story. We're just done telling it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And this is not Birds of Prey. I'm sorry. All right, that's all I'm going to say about that. All right, let's move on to the last story in this issue, which was Ace the Bat Hound in Hounded, Part 6 of 6. Batman fights a grizzly bear, proving he's the real Batman. The villains bid at the auction for Batman, but Ace shows up. Batman and Ace take down the bad guys, and the bear finds a new home at Wayne Wooded Reserve. The end.
Really good conclusion to this, Drew. I was very satisfied with the conclusion of the story. You got payoff with multiple characters in this. Again, not a surprise, because Russell's such a talented writer, but we got the payoff with Lex Luthor. You got the payoff with Ace coming to the rescue. The bear gets a really nice ending, which was nice. The turtle teams up with the Flash. It's good stuff, Drew. Just a really enjoyable story. I unless I'm forgetting one, this has been my favorite of all of the Urban Legend stories so far.
That doesn't surprise me. To the next Urban Legends, Urban Legends number 17. Now this book was, it felt like it was different, because this was a Batman teaming up with people. We had a Batman and the Flash. We had Batman and Aquaman. We had Batman and Black Adam. And we had Batman, the Riddler, Penguin, and Catwoman, which I thought was the weakest one in this book. I thought the Batman and the Flash one with the team up between Captain Cold and Mr. Freeze, I didn't care for it that much.
I didn't either. I liked a lot of the ideas in it, where you have Freeze kind of in his own hubris underestimating how intelligent and capable Captain Cold is. It's like that part was interesting, but a lot of it was otherwise a really forgettable story. which was frustrating because I thought there was the potential for something really interesting with that combination of heroes and villains. So I was disappointed by that one, Drew, because it was not bad, but I was like, this could have been really good, and it just wasn't.
The Batman and Aquaman one, Mira came off
absurd.
Yes. And I don't know. I didn't care for that one that much either.
It was not a surprise to me, Drew, that the Aquaman team up was written by a man, frankly, given the characterization of Mira. Just, I know it's not always like that, but I was like, I don't usually pay attention in these urban legends one-offs who's writing, because it usually doesn't matter that much unless it's a heavy hitter writer. But when I was reading her characterization, I was like, I have a feeling I know what gender wrote this character.
Yeah, I didn't care for it.
Surprise, surprise.
What I'm curious is what you thought of that Black Adam story, because I didn't really care for that one that much either.
Oh, see, I actually enjoyed that one. The thing that confused me, Drew, is that that is referencing a time period and story that is like two decades old at this point. I mean, this is pretty far pre New 52. I mean, this is pre 52, the year long crossover that DC did. I mean, this is the status quo that they're referencing, Drew, is from the Geoff Johns JSA run, and Dark Reign was, I think, the name of the collection that you can get of these issues. I can't remember what the issue numbers are, but Dark Reign, in that Black Adam and some of the JSA members, like Atom Smasher, essentially go rogue and topple the dictatorship of Kandak and install Black Adam and its new leader. And this is taking place basically like in the aftermath of that story. It's a really good story, and it's one of the major setups to the, as I've said many times, absolutely phenomenal Black Adam story in 52. Is driven in large part by what Johns had done to set up Black Adam's character in Kandak leading up to that. But like I said, that book's two decades old, and we are not in the status quo of that story anymore. So it was fascinating, frankly, that they chose to go back to that. I didn't hate it, Drew, because I was like, oh, this is actually kind of interesting. I don't know how many people are going to remember that story. Again, it's not that it was obscure. It's not an obscure story, but it's been a while. It's not a recent story. So I liked it, Drew, because I liked that era of Black Adam. And it was cool kind of getting a different perspective into that and seeing Batman in particular kind of wrestling with what to do with Black Adam. And that was one of the really interesting things during that run, was the sort of philosophical debate between other heroes in the DC world of, once Black Adam did that, what do you do? Because if you remove him as the dictator of the country or the ruler of the country, you're sort of inserting yourself into the politics of that country, which is obviously something that the Justice League has traditionally tried to avoid, unless they break bad in certain stories, right? So I thought it was, again, I thought it was a fascinating, almost like period piece, in a sense, of a DC comic. And I would really like to see other stories kind of like this, Drew, not just with Batman, but it would be fascinating to see other writers almost just find like a moment in between from some of these old stories where you're not changing anything, right? You're not like reinventing or retconning what happened in the comic, but just being like, hey, you know, in between issues 4 and 5, we never really, you know, maybe time passed and the comic never really, you know, did anything with that. Here's a story that happened during that window. Be really interesting, Drew. I would like to see more stories like that.
Yeah, I see your perspective on that. And I think what I didn't like about the story was the fact that Black Adam transformed back into his regular self to take on Batman. I guess I just see him as staying as Black Adam and not transforming back to take on Batman. You know what I mean? He didn't need to.
Yeah, but if he doesn't do that, there's no story. Black Adam just murders Batman.
Well, yeah, he would murder him, but Black Adam could just stop him.
Normally, Black Adam's character, like you said, is very much in love with himself as a god, right? Like, he very much views himself as being that powerful, and he is that powerful. So him transforming was a little out of character, but I also understood, because you can't have a story if he doesn't do that.
That's true. I mean, you said he'd murder Batman. He doesn't have to murder Batman. He could just fly him out over the ocean, just drop him in there or something.
Right. Well, yeah, but again, there's no, like, if the conflict is between Batman and a powered up Black Adam, unless you start bending over backwards and being, well, Batman had 2 months of prep and he crafted this very specific suit, they're like, okay. Unless you do something absurd, there's no contest there, because Black Adam doesn't have a weakness like Superman does. There's no kryptonite there to be had. I get it. I agree with you, Drew. It's out of character, but there's no story if he doesn't do that. The other thing I will say, for people who aren't familiar with that Dark Reign or Black, I can't remember. I think it was called Dark Reign, or maybe that was the Avengers. I get the mixed up. But anyway,
this story is called Statecraft.
Right, but the story that it's referencing.
Oh, gotcha.
I think it was called Dark Reign. Anyway, for people who aren't familiar with that story, with those old JSA stories, I could see this story also being a little frustrating in that it doesn't really have much of a conclusion. Like, it's sort of like Batman just sort of leaves Black Adam. Again, if you know the story that it's set in, you kind of know where it goes from there, that a lot of the things that Black Adam is warned about from Batman come to fruition. The fact that he is a target, puts his country at danger, is a major warning of things to come that do definitely come to fruition. But if you don't know that, I don't know how satisfying the end of the story is.
All right, well, let's move on to our last two titles for this week. We got Batman Urban Legends number 18 and 19. Now, I noticed these two issues felt like a change to the Batman Urban Legends. One of the things that was missing from both issues was the table of contents they were putting at the beginning of it. So you didn't know what stories were going to be in it. I didn't really care for the Signal and the Outsider stories, part 1 and 2. The Etrigan story was okay. I liked the Pennyworth file story, though.
The Pennyworth story, I'm quite excited to see. What I'm assuming is probably the conclusion next issue, but I'm not sure. One thing, Drew, one like kind of running artistic theme in this was the sort of focusing in on Alfred's mouth. And there was one of them where he's almost kind of doing the duck lips, where he's bursting his lips, and it just cracked me up. I don't think it was meant to be that funny, but I couldn't get enough of it. Every time they zoomed in on Alfred's lips, I was like, oh, Alfred, those lips.
So I found that story pretty interesting.
I do too. I like how it starts out. You can totally see it from Alfred's perspective, right? Where it's a very, very street level thing. The store gets robbed. Alfred's capable of addressing that. So he tries to do it. And the next thing you know, he's dealing with eldritch monsters. Like, things got out of control. And I like him, because it's Alfred, is very aware and willing to admit that he has gotten deep in over his head. And I still love the kind of back and forth between him and Batman, where he would try and get a hold of Batman, and Batman would be in the middle of some absolutely dangerous death trap, being like, "I can wait, Alfred."
I did find that funny too. The only problem is, I think the writer forgot that there's other Bat family members that Alfred could call on. But I do get it. Him just calling Batman, though.
The story has maintained a pretty good balance of tongue in cheek throughout the whole thing, which has made it easy to accept. Like when Alfred sees the bomb and the cliffhanger makes you think that it might explode. Obviously, it's not. But it doesn't even make him do some sort of ridiculous last minute escape. He just dismantles the bomb, and it doesn't seem absurd because the whole comic is sort of not taking itself that seriously. And I think that balance is good, Drew, because it makes things like, why isn't he calling Dick Grayson, right? It doesn't make you question that as much because the comic's not taking itself so seriously that it's making you ask that question.
That's true. And it does make sense that Alfred would know how to disable a bomb. I mean, we've seen him over the years do a lot of stuff helping Batman, so it'd make total sense he'd know how to do that.
Exactly. And again, also it paid off for a light joke, so it was just... I enjoyed it because it's the story is intriguing, but it's also not taking itself so seriously that potential plot holes would matter that much. So it's been, it's the exact kind of story that I want to read in an anthology book like this, Drew, where it's got me interested in getting the next issue so I can see what happens with Alfred, but it's also not like super self-serious either.
Exactly. I also liked the fact we got a Batman and Robin Tim Drake story. So I was happy to see that too. And it felt like it was an old school one. So, you know, before Damian came along, that was fun. I didn't really care for that Killer Croc one where the guy was trying to wear a leather costume or whatnot and killing the alligators. I did not care for that story.
I didn't care for that one either, Drew, in particular because I know they definitely show that the guy has gone completely off the deep end by the end, but Batman basically straight up reveals that he's Bruce Wayne when he shows up as Bruce Wayne. The guy knows it's Bruce Wayne, and then he just pulls the cowl on and the guy's like, Batman showed up. And I thought that they were going to kill the character, Drew, at the end when he gets attacked by the crocodile so that you don't have to address that potential plot hole. But then they left him alive. And I was like, well, I to be fair, he never fully acknowledged that Bruce Wayne and Batman are the same person. But, there's legitimately no way he couldn't realize that.
The guy was off his rocker because at the end of the issue, we see that the alligators have eaten parts of his body, and he's happy about it. The alligators have eaten me like I'm communion. I'm like, dude, you are freaking crazy. So whether he knows Bruce Wayne's Batman or not, I don't think it matters because this dude is off his rocker.
right again, and this story isn't going to matter because it's not going to ever be referenced again, but it was a weird, I didn't like the idea of Bruce just straight up pulling the cowl on in front of the guy, as crazy as he was, because it's like, why he wouldn't. Batman at least is not off his rocker, right?
Yes, that would be unlike him.
It was just it was a stupid scene in the midst of a stupid comic where it was just like, this is such a stupid obvious oversight. I can't believe nobody in the editing process caught this mistake. Yeah, I really didn't care for that. I did want to go back real quick to the Tim Drake story. I liked that we also saw Dr. Destiny in that, giving us sort of a double dose of that character for this week.
Yeah, I agree with you. The other thing I wanted to bring up was the ventriloquist story where he's not using Scarface. He's using this boy that he made to kill with. I found that kind of interesting.
I loved the little tease at the end suggesting that maybe the new marionette really did have some sort of supernatural life to it. That was great, Drew. That's a great little touch to that story.
So, yeah, I agree with you. So, man, let me tell you, I don't know if I want to do four of these urban legends all in one week again.
No. It was a lot. There were a lot of pretty good ones. The only really true legitimate standout, I thought, was Russell's story, of course. But man, after your 10th Batman mini story, you're like, okay, I'm good. I was relieved at least, Drew, that a lot of these were at least pretty good, because if they had been below average, it'd have been tough to slog through that many.
I agree with you. Let's try not to do this again. All right, well, that wraps our comic books talk up for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our DC television shows.
Comic-Cons are back, and fans are ready. Hear all about it on The Con Guy Show, where we keep you up to date on all the events, the movies, the people, and the conventions that drive your passions and feed your fandom. Straight from the nerdy heart of Hollywood, California, we are proud members of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, your pizza delivery guys, Dan, Sean, and Paul, serve you a slice of life. We talk to women in comedy, voice actors, film directors and producers, authors. We also talk about conspiracy theories, The Muppets, our top three films of the decades, famous people we confuse with each other, and our favourite stand-up comedians. We have recast Star Trek The Original Series and Babylon 5, and created our alternative superheroes. But most of all, we have had so much fun doing it every 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
The Cosmic Pizza Podcast is not about the cosmos or about pizza.
And we're back. Let's talk The Sandman, Season 1, Episode 5, 24-7. Matthew can't wake Dream up. John goes to a diner and tells the waitress he has a ruby that makes dreams come true. John sits there drinking his coffee and just watching Judy as she interacts with the locals. John wants a world where everyone tells the truth. John uses the ruby on the locals so they all tell the truth. John watches everyone speak their harsh and destructive truth. Truths turn to lust, violence, self-mutilation, and eventually death. Dream comes into the diner and asks John what he is doing. John states he is saving the world from its lies. Dream tells John the ruby was not made for that. Dream wants the ruby back so he can fix the world. John states this is the truth of mankind, but Dream tells him he is wrong. John states they are all lies, but Dream tells John they are not lies, but dreams. Kate dreams of running away where no one will find her. Gary dreams of proving his father was wrong about him. Bette dreams of creating something that matters to people. Their dreams inspired them. Their dreams kept them alive. But if you rob them of their dreams, if you take away their hope, then yes, this is the truth of mankind. John is transported to the realm of dreams. John uses the ruby to take Dream's powers. John crushes the ruby and destroys it, and Dream's powers are set free. Dream puts John to sleep back at the psych hospital, and Dream tells Matthew that tomorrow the rebuilding will begin in this realm and in his. Tonight, at least, humanity will sleep in peace. As Dream walks away, he's being watched by a sibling desire.
What a great episode, Drew. A great conclusion to the first arc of the season.
Really, really good episode. Seeing the cafe slowly break down into just pure horror by the end was great, Drew, because it was such a slow burn. Like, you knew the minute that John walked in there that was going to not end well for anybody, right? And the show just kind of makes you wait for it. And you just see it slowly. You keep seeing it kind of at the edges, right? Like the married couple is bickering with each other. And you can see that it's not going to go well. But the show just kind of keeps you hanging there. And what I liked, Drew, is that it didn't really revel in the violence at the end, right? Like it's brutal, right? But it also doesn't drag that part out. Like, it's a slow burn, and then it's just a quick boom. Right at the end, it all just kind of blows up.
I thought it was a great idea to show us the diner. Things happening in the diner, but we knew it was happening all around the world. Because we had the news on in the background, giving us little tidbits of what was going out on in the world. But we got to see a small slice of it happening in the diner. I thought that was a great way to show us what John was doing to the whole world, but in this little slice of what was happening. Because I think it would be too easy to get caught up in maybe a little more impersonal, John doing it to the world and them trying to show it, instead of the more intimate setting of the diner.
Yeah, I agree. I think it works best in, like you said, in a small setting, because it really drives home the individual terror of this and not just the societal. Because it's not on like a macro level where you're kind of looking at everything from a distance. It's not that dissimilar to a bunch of other catastrophes, right, that we've seen on countless other shows.
Exactly. And it also let us get to know, I like the slow burn too, because it let us get to know the characters before everything falls apart.
Yeah. And seeing Dream at the end kind of show you see increasingly as the episode goes on, you see an increasingly uglier and uglier and uglier side of these characters. And the show wants you to come to the same conclusion at that point that John has come to, that humanity is terrible, right? And deserves this horrible fate that he's subjected them to. And then you see Dream come in and sort of be like, no, I mean, that's sure. If you boil people down to their absolute worst base instincts, yeah, humanity has always been capable of terrible things. But also, and then kind of showing the other side of the coin, that was, I enjoyed that part of the conclusion too. It was just, this was a really, I thought this was the strongest episode of the season so far for me.
Yeah, it was really good. Really good. And it's, and like you said that we were going to get to the end of John's story, and you were right. I thought they were going to drag it out longer, especially at the beginning of this episode. I'm like, okay, well, I think the John story is going to go on longer. No, it didn't. I'm interested to see where the show's going to go from here, because John's not a threat anymore. So where, you know, where's the story going from here? Very interesting. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. DC's Legends Tomorrow, Season 7, Episode 4, Speakeasy Desert, Chicago, 1925. The Legends ditch Hoover's car. Sarah and Ava buy wigs to hide their blonde hair. The police take an interest in the car. The Legends pay triple for the wigs and sneak out the back of the shop. The Legends come across a speakeasy and hide out there. To make some money, Sarah decides to supply Eddie with his alcohol. Spooner, Astra, and Gideon sneak aboard a train for Chicago. The ticket taker chases after them, but a woman named Maud covers for them. Astra helps Maud with her new contract. The mob beats up Eddie and kicks him out of his place. Zari decides to use the mansion to throw a fundraiser to get him back on his feet. The Bullet Blondes are going to provide the entertainment. Astra learns that Maud's boyfriend is Ross Petone. Astra met Ross Petone in hell, and he's a monster. Gideon reveals that Maud is murdered December 18, 1925, but no charges are brought up on her homicide. Astra says they have to help her. Astra is able to convince Maud to run away. Gideon takes Maud's place, nailing the performance. Hoover Bot shows up to arrest the Bullet Blondes. Sarah and Ava tie him up while still doing their performance. They kiss at the end, making sure the crowd knows they are not sisters. After Gideon's performance, the girls try to catch the Legends when they hear about the Bullet Blonde's performance, but they are too late, but they do find Zari's phone. Gary is on a train to New York, while the Legends are hanging out in the mansion with a captured Hoover Bot.
Drew, I'm curious to get your opinion on this. With the Astra subplot, with that trio, it felt like when they were getting off the train that the show really wanted you to think that they were potentially going to get betrayed by the band. The show had Maud act like extremely suspiciously. And I know part of that was they were trying to get you, they want you to feel the same sort of lack of trust that Spooner has. But it felt like more than that, Drew. My impression, and again, this could absolutely be wrong, and maybe they just did it weirdly, was that they were intending to do something different with Maud when they got off the train and then decided to instead have the storyline that they went with, which is Astra saving her from, you know, her fate of being murdered, which I don't have a problem with, Drew. Honestly, obviously, is a much more feel-good story. But the scene where they leave the train is very, very odd considering the direction they ultimately went with for that story.
I agree with you, because it felt like they were going another direction. Like she had some sort of, it felt like she was a villain.
She got a note and reacted to it in a way that she figured something out or found something or was going to need to do something. And then I don't think we ever saw her act on whatever that note was. I could be wrong, but it really feels to me like they were going to do something else and decided not to. Which is fine, but then it surprises me that they would have left that scene in at all, because, I mean, God knows they could have filled that episode a different way, right? I don't know. It was very odd, Drew. I don't know. again, given the direction that that subplot eventually went in, there was really no need for that. There was no need for us to feel suspicious of her because they never did anything with that.
I agree with you. They should have took that out. Yeah, but I like the story they went with. I thought it would have been much better than her being a villain or whatever.
Oh, agreed. I again, if they did change it, I think they made the correct choice because it's far more interesting to see that than to see them get another surprise betrayal. Like, okay, whoa, that's new and different, right? They definitely made the right choice if they did make a change. If they didn't make a change, I really don't understand what that scene was in the first place.
I thought it was another fun episode of The Legends. I love the performance by the Bullet Blondes. I thought that was fun, especially when Hoover showed up and they just kind of made him part of the performance.
Yeah, I agree.
So, another fun episode of The Legends. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Stargirl, Season 3, Episode 3, Frenemies, Chapter 3, The Blackmail. Courtney makes breakfast for the family, then goes over the facts they know about the gambler's murder. The killer had incredible strength. The gambler was stabbed in the heart with something. The Crocs come over uninvited and take over breakfast. Beth receives a bunch of documents on her goggles. She thinks the gambler was blackmailing someone. We learn that Cindy Berman is sending her files from the gambler's laptop. Beth discovers that the deposits made to the gambler were wire transfers that came from an Irwin Hessen, an alias for Lawrence Croc. The JSA decide not to tell Sylvester because they don't want him rushing in again, like he did with the Shade. When Cameron is rude to a teacher that is trying to help him, he gets into it with Rick. Cameron uses an icicle to flatten the tire on Rick's Mustang. Cindy comes over to Courtney's house and makes sure Starman knows that the gambler was blackmailing the Crocs. Cindy even suggests they go together to take down the Crocs. Starman doesn't trust Cindy and tells that to her face. Mike Dugan overhears the conversation. Starman confronts the Crocs at the grocery store 5 minutes before closing. The trio have a big battle. Pat shows up in the robot suit and puts an end to the fight. The Crocs talk to the Dugan Whitmores and tell them the truth about the gambler. 2 months ago, he stopped blackmailing them and paid back every cent. Cameron apologizes to Courtney for being a jerk. Cameron doesn't want to talk about what is bothering him. Courtney states that that is okay, and they just go for a walk. Sylvester decides to return to the crime scene and make sure they didn't miss anything. Sylvester is attacked. They sure made it seem like Sylvester was attacked by Grundy.
At minimum, that is definitely what the show wants you to think. Whether that's the case or not, it's going to be interesting to find out.
They had Cindy Berman acting really mysterious in this. What is she trying to accomplish?
Yeah, for the second straight episode, Drew, she's very clearly up to something other than what she says she is. I had a harder time swallowing the team just sort of letting it go this episode. At the end, when she goes to the lunch table and she's like, oh, I just wanted to team up with Starman. I was like, and they just all accept that outright, Drew? Even Wildcat accepts that? Come on, man. I don't know. I had a hard time believing that the team was just kind of believed her explanation.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
That was one of her flimsy excuses in a long line of flimsy excuses that she has given for things that she's done.
I don't think she murdered the gambler, but she is up to something for sure. I wouldn't even be surprised if she's trying to put the Justice Society back together.
That's the thing that's really interesting to me, Drew. I have genuinely no idea what she is up to exactly. She's kind of all over the place in what she seems to want. I'm very fascinated to see as the season progresses what they're going to do with her character. Changing notes, though, I had a hard time this episode. I know that it's consistent with what they've shown with Sylvester kind of going off the reservation and, you know, acting irresponsible, to put it lightly. But I had a tough time with the heart-to-heart conversation that Pat gives him at the end, where it's like, you've got to be a better person, not for yourself, but to set an example for Court, to be a dad to her. And I was like, that speech in and of itself, Drew, was good. But the problem that I had with it was heavily implying that the thought had never occurred to Sylvester before this, that he should be a role model in the way that he behaves. So it implied that in his entire career as Starman, leading up to that point, that he had acted basically the way we've seen him act these past two or three episodes, which is wild. It's just no way.
I agree with you. And the other thing I want to point out is it feels like they're trying to make him an antagonist for the season, possibly.
They just have felt, their characterization of him has felt all over the place. I'm sure part of it, I think the showrunners want us to be unsure what to think of him. And they're doing a phenomenal job because they're feeding us so many different perspectives of him. But the thing that I'm struggling with, Drew, there's a decent explanation in that he's come back to life after theoretically he and all of his friends were murdered by the ISA. And he has come back. So there's survivor guilt there. And now he's got to deal with all of the people responsible for the murder of all of his close friends are walking out in the world free. So his rage there is understandable. I want that to be clear. But his actions, Drew, have been so intense and over the top, but not portrayed in a way that it's supposed to be unusual for him. That's the thing that I think has been tripping me up. Like I said, that's what got me with that speech Pat gave him, was the implication that Sylvester wasn't acting abnormally for himself, that he was, that was somewhat status quo for him, and that's confusing because I feel like that would be paint a very different picture of what the JSA was from what we were told they were.
Yeah. The other thing Sylvester can't get over is Pat's not a sidekick anymore. Pat's moved on from that, but Sylvester hasn't seen that quite yet.
Agreed. That one is easier for me to, I can wrap my head around that one a lot easier. Like, again, that makes sense for a guy that, again, has died and is trying to come back and, you know, adjust to the new status quo and new life that he's found himself in. That part of the story makes sense to me. It's the just intense overreaction and violence. I mean, Drew, he blows that grocery store up. You can't tell me that he doesn't know better there.
I agree with you. He would know better than that. Why are you going to confront the Crocs in the middle of a grocery store anyways? That's just stupid.
Yeah. My frustration with his character and his storyline so far is that I feel like the show is asking us to essentially forget that he had been a superhero before this while simultaneously remember that he was a superhero before this. They're asking two like things that don't go together.
Yeah, exactly.
A long and successful superhero career, and the dude doesn't know not to, you know, essentially blow other people up in the midst of a completely avoidable fight. Come on, man.
I totally agree with you.
I'm very curious to see where the season goes, Drew. I mean, I like this show, obviously, to begin with, but it's got me really intrigued. Like, what the heck is Cindy up to? Ultimately, what is the direction that Sylvester's character going to go? I don't know. And also, of course, the heart of the season so far, the murder mystery, all of that, Drew, it's got me very excited for the next episode. Because I don't know I genuinely have no idea what's going to happen on multiple fronts for the plot this year, which is exciting for me.
It's exciting for me, too. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so since we've seen presumably the conclusion of this character, I wanted to shout out about the character Dr. Destiny, who we first got in our Urban Legends comics, and then of course we saw the conclusion to his story in Sandman this week. I knew, Drew, that Neil Gaiman had used DC characters in his Sandman run, and I remembered that Dr. Destiny had been a part of that somehow, but I had forgotten who that was. And once I saw his character in Urban Legends and it referenced the dreaming, it was like, oh yeah, that's who John D is. So for people who are maybe not familiar or don't know, John D, a.k.a. Dr. Destiny, is much older than Sandman. His first appearance was in Justice League of America number 5 all the way back in 1961. And has also appeared in other things like the animated Justice League. He's a villain in that.
His first appearance in Sandman is like right at the start, issue number 2, collected in Preludes and Nocturnes, and then pops up again several times after that. But he is a part of that very first arc that we're seeing adapted in the show. But I thought really cool because obviously the version that we get in the show is not usually what we see. With Destiny, we're more used to the skull motif that he uses, like we see in the animated show or we see in the comic, in the superhero comics a lot. But again, really cool. Cool seeing a DC Comics like superhero world character getting adapted into something different and blending into this more realism, relatively speaking, based world that we see in Sandman.
All right. And for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about going to the casino. I hadn't been to a casino for like since my honeymoon, so like 20 some years. One of our friends was going to the casino for his birthday, so we tagged along, and they had this Linda Carter Wonder Woman slot machine that we played. Didn't win any money, but it was kind of fun to watch. Now my friend whose birthday, he actually won some money off that Wonder Woman machine. It was fun watching him play.
Oh, that's cool.
So. But yeah, I hadn't been to the casino for ages, and it was fun to see that there was a Wonder Woman slot machine there. I just thought that was fun. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about this week, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Batman One Bad Day, Two-Face, Batman Superman World's Finest, Batman the Knight, Black Adam, Catwoman, Nightwing, The Flash, Dark Crisis, Young Justice, and of course our DC television shows, The Sandman, DC Legends Tomorrow, and Stargirl. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go. You sure this is necessary? The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.